Thank you, Commissioners. Next up, if we could have Kane Duncan, Sustainable Dairy Advisor for Fonterra.
Mate, same deal for you. Any corrections? And you're welcome to highlight briefly a few points.
Thank you, sir. There was just one correction to my evidence at paragraph 5.41. And that was, it currently says Rule 35 is modified as suggested in paragraph X of Mr. Willis's statement. It should be paragraph 15.12 and 15.16.
Thanks.
And if I may, I'll just make a couple of points. My evidence is largely focused on the practical applications of the rules and policies as they relate to our farms. I just want to highlight two of the rules in my submission. One is Rule 32, which deals with new effluent storage. And basically there's a lack of provision for above ground storage tanks. They become a non-compliant activity by virtue of the fact they need to be signed off by a certified professional engineer in accordance with either Practice Note 21 or 27. And those practice notes don't have any specific design standards around above ground storage tanks. Practice Note 21 very much deals with effluent ponds, like various constructed ponds. In that regard, above ground storage tanks in Southland do require a building consent, and the structural requirements, the durability, etc., is dealt with under the Building Act and the Building Code. We've made the recommendation that above ground storage tanks that do have a building consent are actually moved to a controlled activity where you can control how far away they are from waterways and those sort of things. Moving on to Rule 35, just the provisions around feed pads. Doesn't appear to acknowledge feed pads and standoff pads, animal housing, important as a mitigation tool, and especially in some of those areas like Old Matera Physiographic Zone, where they'd be non-compliant. Essentially we're asking that they should be allowed for as a restricted discretionary activity where effluent is collected, contained and spread. Obviously with a feed pad there, basically sort of three discharges from that. One might be effluent that lands on the pad. If it's not sealed, it obviously goes through the pad into groundwater. Or if it's a sealed pad without a collection system, runs off the side, same principle, it can flow off to surface water or potentially groundwater. Or the third scenario, which I've highlighted here, is around if it's a sealed pad, it's collected, and it's dealt with in a very similar fashion to your dairy effluent, then there should be provisions made that those pads are and can be used as a mitigation tool for nitrate leaching, etc. The only other point I'd like to make was around the drop test provisions. And that's just allowing for other methods where they're appropriate. So at the moment we've got a drop test which by and large measures reasonably large, but it has to be a reasonably large leakage before you would have that, whereas a lot of the ponds that were designed over the last 5 or 6 years in accordance with Practice Note 21 have leak detection drains under them. Lined pond, you get a rip in the liner, obviously it would flow the path of least resistance, so those drains are underneath that have peak gravel, etc. on top, flow into that. Sorry, there's only one other point I was going to make, so chop around here slightly. So back to Rule 32, which is with those smaller sumps. Obviously a lot of dairy farms would have potentially 2 or 3 25,500 litre sumps generally prefabricated in the ground. Obviously with the current wording, anything that refers to total capacity of 35,000 litres, if you're over that, you'd need to have a CPN sign it off. You'd need to have And that could be quite problematic in terms of actually getting a CPN. You don't have that, you're into a non-compliant activity, which for those sort of structures, they are generally not used for storing. They're used as either treating effluent or they are a transfer system. If it goes into the sump, you pump it out to your primary storage. So what combined with the setbacks and other conditions of that rule, we believe they're relatively low risk. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see if we have questions for you. Lloyd's out of rooms.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The main part I just wanted to raise with you was reading the Mr. Willis's changes to the Rule 32, people on storage, and recognising that we have three distinct pond types and drop test facilities. I'm just really wondering whether that's actually written the best way to capture all three types of ponds, given that we have clay lined in the ground, lined in the ground and above ground. Two of those are quite straightforward to actually see, another one has a drop test. I'm just wondering whether it's not clearly even in the marked up version that those three pond types or storage facilities are clearly marked. I understand who's there, but there seems to be different rules around how they're being built or made. And I'm wondering whether we can streamline or standardise that more so it's a lot easier to read and follow.
And that's Rule 32, that's for new structures.
Right? Yes.
Yep. So what we did is essentially, what we recommend is you separate out the above ground storage tanks, which are obviously not covered by any of those practice notes. So that's your first storage and becoming more and more common. And then with your ponds, Practice Note 21 does cover both clay-lined and synthetic-lined ponds, so those requirements could sit within that same framework. And then under 32, correct me if I'm wrong, is there a drop test requirement? I don't think there is a drop test requirements once it's complete. Oh, sorry, there is. So if it's a clay-lined pond, then you also have to do a drop test on it. I suppose in terms of air submission, it would be, you've got your above-ground storage tanks, which is separate, you then have your ponds, and then in terms of the rule structure, if you've got a clay-lined pond, which arguably is the highest risk, is a new pond, then you've also got the added requirement for a drop test. If it's a lined pond, under the rewording, it doesn't require a drop test. So it shouldn't be that seems to work quite well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
In your pre-circulated material, you make a comment about silage leachate,
yes.
And say unless there is new science to show that this leachate poses significant risk, you'd not see it. You see this rule as unnecessary. My question is there some old science that tells us it is harmless, and if so, where would I find that material?
Yes, I'm not aware of it. I've based it on the report that was done by the council in 2010, I think it was, to replace the rule that originally said there would be that all pads had to be sealed. So as part of that, there was some evidence that the council had done on that. And I apologise, you may not have had it because it was supposed to be attached to
my... We do have it.
Yeah, we've got it.
Okay. So in that it talks about those effects and the BOD being obviously a big concern to surface water. Bear in mind if it gets in there, it strips the oxygen out and things die. With groundwater, obviously, unless it was flowing directly in there, you do have soil above it, etc. to fulfill that. So no, I'm not aware of any evidence there.
Thank you.
I'm just clarifying your answer to Lloyd.
Yes.
The lined pond also having the under the inspection would include the inspection.
Yes, Practice Note 21, that is a part of Practice Note 21, yes. In terms of having gas venting drainage underneath.
Yes. So. They may also be under the clay line?
No.
No. So they're older and older. Thank you.
No, I didn't have any questions. Two questions from me. Just at your paragraph 3.4, when you say going to roll out a farm environment and service to your farmers, and earlier on you've noted there were 844 Fonterra suppliers.
Yep.
How long have you anticipated it might take to cover all of the 844 farms with that program?
Sure. So this season we have a target, increasing staff from 2 sustainable dairy invites, which is a mile to 4, and a target of 320 for this season, similar next season, which would see around 650 within 2 years. Obviously there'll be other people who utilise different means to obtain those plans, so there's a slight indication, probably 2.5 years if we did every single one.
And here's a question that I'd like you to go away and think about rather than answer now, because it might require a bit of thinking. I was just interested in Rule 35B Romans 3. And my query was, does that duplicate the requirements of Rule 32? And why I asked the question is that Rule 35 is an effluent discharge rule, not an effluent storage rule.
Yep.
And so I was wondering whether it might be appropriate to delete 35B3 and to instead modify Rule 32 so it deals not only with the storage of the effluent but any discharge that might emanate from that storage, so it's a self-contained rule, and then Rule 35 separately and explicitly deals with the discharge of that stored effluent onto land. So can you give that some thought and come back to us with some kind of answer in writing on that?
Sure.
And are you able to do that by Friday fortnight?
Yes.
Great, good. Wonderful, thank you very much. And Ms. Madison, we're going to have the next witness now.